This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, since we last visited, there have been a whole heck of a lot of things that have happened. Of course, most recently and importantly in the magic community is we had the passing of several of our magical brethren, and it was quite sad to report the passing of several of our titans of our industry, such as Johnny Thompson, and we also had Marshall Brodeen, Anthony Brahms, Steve Dushek, and some others over the last, well, within the span of just a very few days. It was just a very bad week, and it was something that had affected us all in one manner or another. And I know that many of us knew these people personally, have had a lot of interaction with them of varying degrees for one person or another. And I know that tragedy strikes in people's lives every day, certainly. These were sad incidents. I don't know that tragedy would be the word. You know, tragedy implies to me that it is something that might be the result of some sort of an accident or something that was unforeseen. In these cases, I believe that they were people who had been ill, had some physical issues or problems, but nevertheless, still the passing, even when you're watching or waiting for a telephone to ring, it always surprises you when it does. And it's the same thing here, although that we knew that some of these people were in poor health. When it comes to the time for their last day to pass, then it's still a sad day. So it's saddened our community, and we certainly miss them, and our thoughts and prayers are with their families and friends. And again, you know, sad for the community. A lot of things that have happened, but they have made us stronger with the legacy that they have left, their love for magic and what they have given us, and those are the giants upon whose shoulders we are now standing. So we are grateful for the opportunities to have known these people and to be able to move forward, and that's all that we can do, is really try to do the best we can and forge ahead. Also, over the past week, it's been kind of busy because I had another person who actually came through. I had Bernardo Sedlacek, who was on his way across the country on a U.S. lecture tour on his way to the 4F convention, which will be later in April, which will be there and reporting from there as well. And so he spent a few days here at the house, and he gave a lecture to our local Houston club, and also, which was fantastic, and highly recommend to other clubs. If he comes anywhere near your area, you should go and hear. I love what he has to say. Really, it's a master class. His lecture that he talks about is not necessarily the tricks, although they are mind-blowing, and he taught me some stuff privately that he didn't really teach in the lecture that just were amazing. But beyond that, it's just he has some really good insight as to audience dynamics and how to actually sell the trick and the psychology and everything behind it. So if he comes to a city near you where he's going to be lecturing, I suggest that you take your mind with you, because it will be opened when you hear what all that he has to say. Got a lot of fascinating ideas. I said it's really more of a master class of psychology and the why, not so much the how. Although he does teach you the how, and you'll be amazed, but you'll learn a lot also about what's really important, and that is the magic that is within the magic. Since this podcast that I posted last week with Guy Hollingworth, that was posted, of course, whenever we had that conversation was this past January, I believe it was, when we were in Columbus, Ohio, and that was during the Magi Fest. But from the time that was posted until now, there was something else that kind of came up, which I ended up posting an unexpected podcast, I guess the best way of trying to say that. I had attended the Penguin live event. It was called Penguin Max. In the past years, over the last 3 years or so, Penguin has gone across the country, across the U.S., doing these Penguin Expos, which were kind of like dealer shows, kind of, with some mini lectures in between. Well, they have expanded that a little bit to be more of a day and a half type of a convention. And made it something that was going to be from a Friday night until midnight on Saturday. But moreover, not just a dealer show, but actually having a separate room in which they had brought their own video equipment and audio equipment and lights and sound and stage and everything. It was really, really great. It was a nice experience. And also more than just little workshops with 20 minutes of one guy teaching one thing or another, but also some more full-length lectures where we had one-hour lectures. And the ones that I saw this last week included people like from the other brothers, at Michael Weber and Chad Long and Dirk Losander, Michael Kaminskas. There were so many others. It was just a really good convention. Nevertheless, the point being is that I wasn't certain that I was going to be actually releasing a podcast, but I had my microphone I took with me and never know who you're going to run into. And so I thought, well, while I'm here, I might as well give a rundown of this experience. And so typically, again, for conventions, I give daily updates. Well, since this was only one day, there was only one update to give. So when I got back, I posted that. And so that was something that was unexpected. Again, I wasn't sure I was even going to release the thing, but I thought you might like to know what all went on. So when it comes to your town, you'll know what to expect, because they are going to be doing about a half dozen of these throughout this year here of 2019. And so if it does come to somewhere near your area, you ought to check it out. And also, I would suggest that when you do hear about it, that you might try to capitalize on the discount, because I say discount, they have usually an introductory price of, I think it's like $100 if you register fairly quickly. If you wait a little bit longer after the 2 or 3 days, whenever that they first announce it, then it will go up to about $150. Certainly, it still is a good deal, because you get a lot of lectures for that low price, and of course, access to a lot of really cool stuff that the dealers are going to be selling in there. So anyhow, it was very good. Go back. You can listen to that episode. Also, I encourage you to sign up for our newsletter, in which I talk about what the podcasts are this week, as well as what's coming up next week. The recent newsletter, again, didn't envision that particular little surprise or bonus podcast we put together, but I hope you enjoyed that then as well. Well, let's kind of move on from where we were there and to this week's episode. I mentioned that I had spoken this to Guy Hollingworth when I was at the Magi Fest, and that was towards the tail end. Actually, it was a day after the convention. I'd stayed over in order to chat with him, and I hope that you guys enjoyed that. Well, as I came back through Nashville, and I was visiting again with my friend Tom Vorshahan, that he said Jessica Jane Peterson was going to be performing at the local House of Cards there in Nashville, and so we got together with her. And this was perhaps one of the most unique recording studios where I have ever recorded a podcast. It was in my car because we were kind of, timing was short, and so we had to do it there. So we just pulled into a parking lot, and we recorded the podcast in my car. Actually, I think it turned out pretty good. From the standpoint that the sound was very good. It had good acoustics inside the car, had good microphones, so I think we have a good solid podcast here, not just from the quality of the recording, but also because of the quality of the conversation. Certainly, Jessica Jane is outstanding in her own right. She had splashed the cover of the Linking Ring magazine for the International Brotherhood of Magicians. That's their monthly journal. And she was on the cover, I believe it was June of 2018. Anyhow, she has been doing just a whole heck of a lot of things. If you don't know who she is, you will soon. In fact, she's going to be performing at the IBM convention in Scottsdale this coming summer. So be sure and catch her there. She does a little bit of everything. She's, of course, been on Penn and Teller Fool Us, when she was doing some fire reading. She talks a little bit about that. She's worked cruise ships. She's been working down in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and working a stage show. She does, as I said, some fire reading, some geek magic, some straight magic, some close-ups. She does doves. She's a box jumper. An assistant, a magician, everything. She is just a powerhouse and so young. I think about 27, very young lady, but just a wealth of experience and does it all well, and one of the most charismatic people, has a great personality. You're going to love this conversation that we have. You'll learn a lot then also and be inspired as well. So please welcome my guest this week, Miss Jessica Jane Peterson, or as I like to call her, JJ, here on The Magic Word.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for MagicWordPodcast.com. And today we are speaking with someone who is a cruise ship magician, worked in Branson and in Pigeon Forge. And right now she's speaking to us from inside my car. please welcome Jessica Jane.
Hi.
Hi, Jessica. Or JJ. Can I call you JJ?
Actually,
people ever call you JJ?
JJ. Yeah. Lance Burton has called me JJ.
Well, there we go. We're in good company. So I, when I was talking with Tom Forgian, I texted him and I mentioned JJ. So I thought it'd be easier, you know, just anyhow. Because, you know, that's one of the things that bugs me is about some people, well, a lot of people will be using short letters instead of spelling Y-O-U for you, just use, you know,
yeah.
You are or whatever. It bugs me, you know. I know it's a young thing and it's like a millennial kind of, you do that probably all the time. It's a, you know, for texting, I'd just rather spell out the word, you know, just I'm a purist.
I totally get that.
But when it comes to Jessica Jane, I think I'm just going to say JJ. That's going to be a, it's a lot easier that way. And I started to say Jessica Jane Parker, but it's Jessica Jane Peterson, actually.
Yes, Jessica Jane Peterson, even though it sounds like Sarah Jessica Parker and she's super cool.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that is not my name.
Yeah. and you were starting to say something about the cruise ship, that about the last name, or, you know, Peterson versus
yeah.
Jessica Jane, and so trying to find a name.
Yeah, I had originally, Terry Evanswood was the one that started calling me Jessie Jane on stage,
yep, yep.
And then I found out that Jessie Jane was a name that was taken by someone who I probably didn't want to come up under my search results.
I think, you know, that Tyler Knight had done the same thing, changed his name to Kyle Knight.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He used to work on Magic Island, and I've always known him, you know, as Tyler. And,
yeah.
And, matter of fact, I mentioned that to him one time on the podcast. I said, Tyler. He said, no, it's Kyle now. And then later he was telling me, yeah, if you do a search, you know, there's...
Yeah.
Same with Jesse.
Yeah.
And,
so that's when I went to Jessica, though.
Right. I know we're kind of alluding to something here that people are going to now go out and Google this just because we're talking about it. Who is Tyler Knight? Who is Jessie Jane? Oh.
Okay.
Not that kind of act. So anyhow, did you tell him to change, start introducing you then as Jessica?
Well, I liked going by Jessie Jane because my grandpa always called me Jessie as a kid. So
oh,
I'm
yeah,
like, okay,
sure.
And Jane's
yeah.
my real middle name. So that worked out for me. And then I started working on my own promo and stuff. And I mm-hmm. thought, you know, Jessica Jane works.
Yeah.
And then I did Fool Us and they called me Jessica Jane Peterson mm-hmm. on Fool Us, which
I didn't expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, really? You didn't expect that?
I didn't. I thought it was just going to be Jessica Jane.
That's what you'd probably sign the contract for,
yeah.
the whole name. Right.
Yeah.
Right. They don't have a thing on there for stage name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then I went by Jessica Jane for a while, and I liked Jessica Jane. I liked the logo for
yeah.
it and everything that we worked on.
Uh-huh.
And I just got off the Holland America Zuider Dam about 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and one of the guys in the steel band,
no
the steel drum
this,
thing.
By the way, Zuider Dam, yeah.
No, yeah, just... yeah, yeah. All those bleep ships.
Yeah. So anyhow, you on the ship and what?
Yeah, so the guy that was in the steel drums band
yeah, yeah.
said, you know, I like Jessica Peterson better than Jessica Jane.
Mm.
And then the other guy's like, I like Jessica Jane Peterson. I like Jane Peterson. And I'm thinking, okay, now that I've actually committed to it and have the website and the logo and everything,
yeah.
now somebody tells me otherwise.
Yeah. No, I'm with you because Jessica Jane has an alliteration, well, not only alliteration, but it has a rhythm about
yeah.
it. I think Jessica Jane. It's kind of like I was talking with someone recently about Banachek's name. You know, if he'd come
yeah.
up with that name, and he asked me, and I said, I don't think it's going to work. And anyhow, that it's like Dunninger. Banachek, Animan, Jessica, you know,
yeah.
so it has a nice rhythm to it that people are going to know and remember your name that way. So I think Peterson is a little bit long.
Yeah.
And you want to have something that's going to be kind of easy, the roll off the tongue. And I think the Jane is easier. Jessica,
yeah.
it sound like two first names, basically, you
mm-hmm.
know, and you can kind of, you know, play on that. So I personally just think that stick with Jessica Jane.
I know, too.
Better than Jess Jane.
Or, yes.
Yes.
Well, it's easy to remember, too. And I remember there was an interview I read with David Copperfield
mm.
asking why he had changed his
From
name
Kotkin.
To Copperfield.
Yeah.
And it was, he literally said, it's easy to remember.
Sure. Well, in that case, it you know, it was Kotkin, and
yeah.
it didn't even look like Copperfield, but I'm sure he was looking for something that people would remember, and obviously with the Dickens character, that is something that it's a classical book, and people will remember that. And the same thing like with Jessie Jane. Certainly, I could, you know,
yeah.
it's like Jesse James, and you're Jessie Jane, and so that makes sense, but unfortunately, yeah, the name's taken. you know, they do that in Hollywood a lot with people. Some of the people who, like Cary Grant and some other people have actually gone through their agents, and the agents say, you know, the name name of such and such is not going to work, or that there's another person by that same name. You need to change your name to something else.
Yeah.
And so they do. I can't remember what Cary Grant's original name was, but anyhow, yeah, Marilyn Monroe, I don't think that was her real name either. Well, of course it wasn't. What was Marilyn Monroe?
Norma Jean, right?
Norma Jean, that's
Norma
it.
Jean.
Yeah, exactly. And so there won't be another Marilyn Monroe because that name is taken. What I'm saying is, and the same thing, like if you were to have an agent in Hollywood and you wanted to go by Jesse James, and even if you had been promoting yourself as that, they would change your name before you go to the next level, to something that is not taken, that wouldn't be searchable and find two people.
Yeah.
Because if an agent wants to book you, they want you to have that one exclusive name. Does that make sense?
So that's an equity thing too, right?
Yep.
It's not like through the
union
you can only have
one.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think you're right on that. And so you've been working on
the
cruise ships, and you talked about Terry Evanswood, because I understand that you have been working with him for a number of years then also.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll tell you what, I had never even heard of Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. I didn't even know it was a place.
Okay.
And my friend,
you heard of Dollywood, I guess.
I'd heard of Dollywood, but
I
honestly didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So my friend Alan, we did a little road trip, and we went down to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee for Thanksgiving in 2010. And we went to see Terry's show.
Yes.
We were sitting in the front row, and I knew who Terry was, and he knew who I was, but we'd never met in person before.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the show was about to start, and Terry ended up needing an assistant.
During the show?
Right before the show started. And he asked me
if
I knew the, you know, the metamorphosis, the tube illusion, the this, the that. And I ended up in the show that night, and I stayed with him for 2,500 shows.
2,500. Now, how many years would that be?
That would be on and off for 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 2,500 shows. Probably over that, actually. I haven't done the math recently, but it was a lot.
Wow.
It was a lot of shows.
How many shows a night would that
be? We would average 1 to 2 shows a night. Some days we had 3 shows, but it was 6 days a week usually. So we were doing at least 2 shows a day, 6 days a week. In the off season, we did 1 show a day.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot. It was a lot.
What's considered
of shows.
The off season down there? Is that winter?
Off season is January up to Valentine's Day, and then you usually would start Valentine's weekend, go a little bit slow until spring break. Then spring break is 2 shows a day, and then they'll add school shows, so you're doing 3 and 4 shows a day
because
the schools are coming in. And the show is the same for the schools as it is for the nighttime show. So you're doing the full out, you know, hour and 15 minute illusion show in the mornings.
There's no real change of for kids versus the regular evening show or whatever.
No,
it's the
same show.
Yeah. Wow, interesting. Well, yeah, and Pigeon Forge, of course, I had been there several years ago when we had the Winter Carnival of Magic there.
Yeah.
Actually, it used to be in Gatlinburg, or I think it's in Gatlinburg now. Yeah. But anyhow, it went then to Pigeon Forge, and that was the year that we had a snowstorm for 24 inches in 24 hours.
Oh, man.
And we were snowed in, and they said, okay, we're going to go an extra day, you know. And so, why don't you do a lecture? And, you know, everybody was there, and so we just did an extra kind of a show, you know, basically for each other because we had nowhere to go.
That's
and it
cool.
was snowed in. There was a CNN helicopter that was, you know, going around, you know, taking pictures, and they couldn't get food into the place because, you know, people who were the service personnel, you know, the roads were snowed in. It was amazing time and a lot of fun in a way for us, but probably not a lot of other people who were there, you know, at the time. But Pigeon Forge really is a cool little city. But Gatlinburg also has a mountain where you can go skiing.
Oh yeah, Obergatlinburg.
Oh, yes, Obergatlinburg.
I've actually worked up there.
Have you really?
Yeah,
okay.
I worked in an Oompa-pa Oktoberfest band.
And okay. Were you singing?
I was singing.
Okay.
That was the first singing job that I had. So I would do that during the day,
yeah.
And then I'd eat fire, do some magic tricks themed to Oktoberfest, and then I'd go do shows with Terry.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Oh, so that was an additional gig you
oh,
had on
yeah,
top of
Oh, yeah, that
the
was my side job.
Oh,
so singing with an Oompa-pa band and escaping out of a beer barrel.
Did you? Well, who was the magician with the beer barrel?
Oh, that was me.
Oh, wait, okay. So somebody had to seal you up on the thing. I mean, who were you working with?
With the band. We worked with the band.
Gotcha.
And we did all sorts of stunts and
so
stuff.
Were you singing German songs after?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you learned German.
Well, the German Oktoberfest songs, which is,
okay.
There's some German songs, but there's
songs.
Also like 50s songs. Yeah, drinking
okay.
songs.
Right.
We changed the lyrics to my favorite things to my favorite beers. It was interesting.
Okay. Well, there apparently was another theater right near the base, I think, of the ski resort over there because I'm trying to think who who it was. I know Keith Fields and another friend of mine had a show for a long time.
At the Space Needle, yeah.
Exactly. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Was that where the Oompah band was? Is that where
No, we were up actually at Oktoberfest in Obergatlinburg.
In the Obergatlinburg.
They had
gotcha.
A dinner
okay.
theater in there. They bring us in for the month of October and have us
Did you ever ski
play.
There by the chance?
Oh, I've never skied
what?
Or anything.
Oh, well, you're from New Jersey. You got
I know.
Snow. You're kind of used to cold
but
weather.
But I get scared of that stuff. Like, I've never skied. I don't know how to ride a bicycle. Like, I don't know normal things. I can do crazy stunts and stuff, but when it comes to normal everyday things, my parents were very protective, and I didn't learn that stuff. We didn't really do anything like that.
When you went on vacation as a kid, where did they take you? You just go like to Coney Island or something?
We
or
didn't
what?
Really do vacations. We went to Disney once, and we would go to Cape May, New Jersey, and go on the whale watching boats and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, our vacation was basically all year because I was on the road with my mom and my godparents with the magic show. Mm-hmm. So that my whole life is a vacation.
Your godparents were who?
Alan Sue Belmont.
Okay, and he was a magician.
Yeah, yeah. He's still working and doing fairs and performing arts center shows. And then my mom also worked with John Bundy.
I know John Bundy. Okay.
Yeah, she worked with him for years. So I grew up around all those guys, sitting backstage, watching mom get sawn in half.
Interesting. Now, did she do actually the thin model sawing, or you talk about the zigzag, or what kind of stuff?
Everything. Okay. Mom did everything, but there is a picture that will always be in my mind of mom and the, it was a blue thin model that John Bundy did, and it was a blue zigzag that was in the show.
Okay.
There, she did everything in that show. I remember they did Six Flags Great Adventure every year in October, and it was the spooktacular type of show that John does now, but at the time he had different characters in it. There was a guy that played like a Beetlejuice character, and mom was in it, and there was Vanishes, and they had the transporter cabinet, and all sorts of really cool stuff. It opened with a shadow box, and it was a neat show, and it was a neat way to grow up watching those illusions unfold, but with that theme, because the Halloween stuff is so much fun.
Exactly, it is.
And between shows, they had the Nerveless Knox did the Batman stunt show across the street, so I used to walk around with my mom between shows thinking the Batman was my best friend.
Yeah, the entertainment world, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I lost a train of thought there. You were talking about the seances. Oh, David Seebach, have you ever, he's got a show. It's a Halloween show he does during October up in Wisconsin, I believe it is. And it's fantastic. Got a bunch of stuff he sells afterwards, but he has magic in the front, and then in the end it's kind of a spook show where there are ghosts flying out over the audience and everything. It's a lot of fun. I don't know where it is now, but he's held it in different places, and at one time it was some sort of a haunted theater, you know, something that was only open like certain days of the year or something.
Yeah.
They don't have things going on. If you ever get a chance to get up there and check it out, it was a good show. David Seebach's a good illusionist. And so illusions are your favorite, or are you like doing close-up as well? Or
you know, I'm sort of changing on all of that. I grew up around illusions, and they were my favorite thing.
That's what
I know
was thinking.
People
sure.
have said, you know, a lot of magicians, you start with close-up magic, you work away your parlor stage, and then you might end up doing illusions, but it's never usually the reverse. So I started with all these illusions. I knew who the makers were, how to fix them, how to pack them, what type of case they go in.
Before you were 13, probably.
Oh, yeah. I knew, you know, who originally invented it. I always had R pins and washers and stuff on me, like, in case something fell off, wanted to piece it together. And so that was what magic was to me, was these big shows that took two huge trucks to move. And then I started wanting to do my own magic, and I realized this was not practical for a 15-year-old to be flying things, which I did. My dad and I flew to Las Vegas. It was the first time I ever competed in a competition, and we literally ground transferred a levitation and a metamorphosis and a bunch of stuff for a teen competition.
Oh my gosh. Was that an SAM convention?
It was the Lance Burton Teen Weekend.
Lance Burton Teen, sure.
Yeah,
sure, sure.
At the Orleans. But yeah, so I started that way, and I realized this is not practical.
I bet the card's so much easier.
Exactly.
Or even being mentalism, you know. Just
oh, man. I'm loving it. Like, after going through all these various stages, no pun intended, I did an illusion production show for Connie Boyd, where I was the lead illusionist. I had like 9 dancers and a bunch of illusions, but we had to, you know, load them off the ship and stuff, and you're moving illusions off the stage at night because the backstage area doesn't have a lot of room for the illusions on the ships. And I realized if I ever had my own show, I would love for it to fit in two suitcases that don't weigh over 50 pounds.
Right. So you can actually take it on the airplane with you. That's
yeah.
right. And have your costume and everything in there to make a change if you need
yeah.
to and whatever. And have a good 45 or actually a 90-minute show if you can, you know, carry that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to find good illusions. The only thing I can think of that you can really do surrounded and packs flat and everything, you know, really is the gypsy rope escape. You
yeah.
know, that's fairly easy. All you need is just the curtain, basically, and the ropes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to be able to do that's a, that plays really, really, really big and easy. You know.
Definitely.
And so when you're performing, do you have other assistants? Well, you're working on the ship. Were you assisting? Were you performing as the magician?
I was the magician
okay,
on
magician,
the cruise
okay.
ship.
And
yeah.
who, now, did you train people who were actually employees on the ship, or did you bring people with you?
It was basically a production show that was already established
oh,
through
okay.
Connie Boyd. This was back in
okay, gotcha.
2013, I think I did the
Boy,
ship.
Time flies.
Yeah, yeah.
Back when you were, what, 12?
Hey!
Yeah. You're such a young-looking lady.
I'm 29
lady.
Now.
Okay.
I'm becoming an adult.
Yes. I've heard a lot of women say they're 29. They just kind of keep that, or then it's 39. They, you know, at a certain age, they just don't advance beyond that.
No,
you know,
I'll
so.
Admit it. I don't mind. But yeah, Connie had 9 dancers in that show. So I jumped in. I didn't have a lot of creative input into it. It mm-hmm. was really hitting the marks and almost learning the show like a dancer would, but I was doing the magic. So there was a floating
right.
ball. There's, you know, a shadow box. We're doing a sword basket, things that go bump in the night, a bunch of illusions like
mm-hmm.
that. And the cast would rotate out.
Right.
So
I got
every
you.
Couple weeks, you get new dancers and you have to show them how
Retrain,
to do it.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. And we
mm-hmm.
were on an Italian line, too, sailing the Mediterranean. So
you
they
get
might
people
not
who didn't speak English.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. And of course, you speak what? 4 or 5 languages?
Yeah, right.
I speak New York and New Jersey. You know, yeah. I talk like you guys.
What do they say? It's a If you speak 3 languages, you're trilingual. If you speak 2 languages, you're bilingual. If you speak 1 language, you're American.
American, that's right.
I'm just, I'm American, but
yes.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying to learn some here and there.
Yeah.
I knew
yeah.
enough to like introduce myself, introduce the show, say welcome to the theater, depending on which languages are on the
sure.
ship.
Right.
So.
Right. And so with that, I would think that you said Connie Boyd had brought you in. So you had to learn the show also.
Yeah.
And they had it scripted, I guess. And was it mostly music? Was it talking?
Mostly music because mm-hmm. there would be between 7 and 8 different languages mm-hmm. being spoken by the passengers on the ship.
Correct.
So for us to do a show like that, it had to play to all languages.
Yeah, that's what... Mr. Electric, you know, Marvin Roy had always said that if you can just do a silent act, you can work anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And he proved it, you know, that he was able to travel internationally and do everything and have a good tight, what was it, 12-minute show or something.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Electric, they had a couple other shows he added to that, you know. But, yeah, if you have something that's going to be different, Rudy Kobe's another one, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the 4 legs and whatnot of working in Macau and wherever else. I mean, that you can work it because it transcends language since it's just visual,
mm-hmm.
you know. So is that kind of what you're thinking long-term, wanting to continue to do more ships and work more internationally, you're thinking here or what?
You know, I like the ships. I was very fortunate that Tom Vorjahan, who's sitting in the back seat waving.
He's been very quiet. Yes.
I'm so proud of you. You've done good. You get an award. I'll give you a cookie. But he booked me on the Winter Carnival of Magic convention.
Yeah.
Actually, that was just last year, wasn't it? Oh,
mm-hmm.
my gosh. So
which last year. 2018. Yeah.
Yeah.
19, yeah.
2018. I left Terry's show January 1st, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I did Winter Carnival of Magic in March. It was March, right?
Yeah.
I opened my own show at Sweet Fanny Adams Theater, hour and 15-minute show, no intermission,
mm-hmm.
on April 28th. Ran all year with my show. I think it went really well. I really enjoyed it. And
mm-hmm.
the McPhersons that own Sweet Fanny Adams, of course, my partner in the show, Chris,
mm-hmm.
who would help me on stage and backstage.
Chris McPherson.
Yeah,
yeah,
Chris
mm-hmm.
McPherson. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love him. He's my best friend.
Okay.
But we rocked that show and we had a blast. And I was very fortunate that a lot of really great opportunities came, honestly, because of
mm-hmm.
Winter Carnival. Jason Michaels
the people
saw me,
said,
yeah.
yeah,
and he booked me on some USO shows. So I went with him and Stephen Bargatze to Greenland, and we entertained
mm-hmm.
the troops. And
okay, was
yeah.
that like last year? Then you say
yeah,
because,
yeah.
Because
it was
I know
last
they
year.
Just recently had done that again.
Yes,
along with
he
Jason
and Christian
Michaels
and Catalina, and
mm-hmm.
yep, they were up in Greenland.
So that was the same tour you were doing last year.
Last year,
gotcha.
Yeah, we went up to Greenland originally, actually, because Christian and Catalina were booked on another gig. And the way
mm-hmm.
it is with Greenland,
yeah, because he's a military, he's a former
yes.
military guy, so yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. The way it works with them, if there's only one flight out per
mm-hmm.
week, I think it's per week. So if there's
from
something
where to where?
From
I mean,
the United States
to Greenland
to the base,
okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if something's wrong with that flight or it gets delayed, you can either be stuck up there for a week or stuck waiting here for a week.
There.
Yeah, so something happened the first time they tried to go up, and Christian and Catalina couldn't go, and they were like, if you wait a day, da, da, da. So this whole thing. But they ended up getting Greenland again, and they were already booked for something and would not have been able to make it up, and Jason went, I wonder if Jessica could do it. So he contacted me, and I went with him, and it went well. So
It's like only 2 weeks or so, isn't it? It's a fairly short tour.
Yeah, well, that one we literally did in 3 days. We flew in, stayed awake, did the show that night, did the tours, went back, came to the United States.
Okay.
And then we got booked for about a month, and that was late October to November of 2018.
For ESO kind of a show?
This was a whole Army tour with Armed Forces Entertainment. Okay. It was me, Jason, and Ben Young. And we did 13 shows in 7 countries in 23 days, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
It was something like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of stuff like that. And I'm very fortunate that, I mean, as of January 1st, I was, granted, I've been a magician all my life and I've been performing magic all my life. But January 1st, my job was working for Terry Evans and his magic show. And within the last year, and it's kind of scary to even think this, I've opened my own show, gone on a USO tour, performed at a magic convention, performed on fair shows, done a show at a performing arts center, you know, worked my first cruise ship, got green-lighted by Holland America to return to work Holland America this year.
Yeah.
And I also have a project that could have me relocating to Los Angeles that I can't really talk about.
I understand. So you may be moving from Gatlinburg to...
Yeah, it's looking like that. It's developed in the last week. And if it... I won't say if. Always say when.
Yeah, that's right. Don't say
when it happens, it'll have things going really quickly. I'll probably be moving out there.
Wow, that's exciting for you because your life is kind of like dominoes. You know, once that you get something, that kind of hits another one, and I think that's important that you kind of will kind of continue that. I mean, you should have a plan, but if the plan takes you in a different direction, then you just adjust your rudder a little bit so this way that you go with where the wind's blowing, I guess, at that time, as long as it ultimately gets you to where you want to be.
Totally. And Tom wrote the article. I was very fortunate. They put me on the cover of the Linking Ring.
That was just recently. Was that the November?
I think it's June.
Oh, it was just the last June. Boy, time flies. June
18. But I was so fortunate to be a part of that. And in the article, he titled it Open Doors because that's what this has been. There's just like an open door here and this door closes and another door opens here.
Right.
And I love the Gatlinburg show and I'm very fortunate for the first time in my life, I have to make a choice.
Wow.
It used to be a door closed, another open, and now I have choices, and that's kind
of
scary.
That's a wonderful thing, yes.
It's wonderful, but it's scary. It was so much easier when it's like, okay, this is the next path, divert, you're going this way. And now it's like, oh gosh, what do I do?
Right. Well, eventually you're going to be having an opportunity, to get an agent who's going to be, you know, saying, hey, here's someone who is hot and is young and has a potential to do whatever, and they'll be kind of directing your career. You
Well, that's how I do the cruise ships right now. Mm-hmm. I have an agent for cruises that I go through.
That's what I had too. I was told a long time ago that you shouldn't be going to the cruise lines individually. I had Barry Ball that was working, you know, for me.
Oh, cool. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm with Taddy, Tad Management.
Okay.
And they're really cool.
Yeah. And you do a singing also during that. I mean, because I'm thinking that Romero, what's his name?
Darren Romeo.
Darren Romeo.
Sorry. Yeah, in Pigeon Forge.
Yes, that's right. And he was there for a long time. Then he went up to Branson, you know, for a while. I'm not
sure
where
he's
performing now.
He's in Pigeon Forge right now.
Oh, he is?
He's been there for about 4 years, I think, now.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't talked with him in a while. I think last time where were we? The Magic Castle, I think he was, I was working close up, and I think he was on the stage, or he maybe was passing through. We sat and chatted for a while, but I think he was just passing through. But yeah, he's a nice guy. I've liked him for a long time. But he does a singing act too, and I say an act, I mean that's I'd say like half and half. It's half singing and half magic. You
mine's
know?
Not like that. I do maybe one or two songs and change it up depending on the venues that I'm working and you know where it fits in. I honestly never thought I would sing in the show because when I was in high school, I auditioned for concert choir, and I loved to sing, but they didn't accept me even into my school's choir.
Okay, wow. Okay.
So I thought, there's no way in the world that I should ever, ever sing.
For the public, yeah.
Yeah. And I was
expect
working...
to be paid for it, especially.
Exactly. Yeah. And I ended up working on a routine in 2017. I'd always wanted to do the Gypsy Thread, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I remember Eugene Berger at Teen Weekend when I told him I wanted to do it, he's like, listen to me, young one. One day, you will be inspired by something. Something will take hold of your soul and inspire you. Then you will know it is the time. It was that sort of
yes,
thing.
That's good.
And yeah, yeah. Which, thank you, Eugene. Yeah. And I did. I waited, and I heard a song on the soundtrack to The Greatest Showman that goes along with my favorite quote. The song was called Tightrope, and my favorite quote is by Carl Wallenda, the great tightrope walker. It's being on the tightrope is living. Everything else is just waiting. And I do a whole routine about that, usually as the finale to my show. Mm-hmm. And I do the gypsy thread to it to symbolize the tightrope and the sort of the trials and the tribulations you go through on the way to living your dream. Mm-hmm. And I sing the song Tightrope from The Greatest Showman.
Okay.
So it's a really pretty heartfelt moment, and I like to show vulnerability in it too,
yes,
and sort of open my heart to the audience.
I think you have to have that as far as these moments. It can't all be high energy or levity. You have to, you know, let them feel some pathos and feel some emotion, so that way they can touch you because you're touching their hearts also.
Yeah.
I've kind of changed my act around to allow for some of these, you know, moments as well, so they get to know me rather than just being the funny guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Because afterwards, oh, you're really good, enjoyed the magic. I like them to come and say, oh, you know, I didn't know this or that was, you know, hope everything's okay, or, you know, that that really touched me, or I had this similar situation. And you can relate to the audience. You know, again, you're touching their hearts. And I think what you're talking about is fantastic. People should pay attention to how they can structure their acts to include those as well.
No, definitely. I think being vulnerable and being yourself on stage is so important. It's like, it's okay to be an exaggerated version of yourself.
Exactly.
But you still got to be yourself in some way.
Granted,
there's exceptions to people who create these wonderful characters, like Lucy Darling.
Yeah.
Absolutely
phenomenal. Right.
You know, phenomenal. But that character has so many different dimensions.
Different,
Carissa is Lucy Darling when she does that act.
Well, even when she's on stage. I mean, when you go, she's in costume, she is, you know, the whole time. I've seen her when she's taking pictures or talking to people. As long as she has on that wig and, you know, that costume, you know, the same accent and everything. I mean, she is Lucy Darling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I used to do a character kind of like that at Sweet Fanny Adams Theater, where Chris and I were partners, and it was very George and Gracie. So it was like, you know, say goodnight, Jesse. Goodnight, Jesse.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. We did multiplying bottles is that. But really, even though we did magic, the magic was just an excuse for us to be our characters on stage.
Okay.
And I had a lot of fun with it. And I even thought maybe I can still continue this character, but I can't do it without Chris.
Okay.
He's the George to my Gracie.
And no one's going to replace him.
Nope, nope.
Yeah.
No, if ever I decided to work on that a little bit more, I'd need Chris.
Yeah.
Completely. You know, so now I'm on that journey where it's, okay, this is me. This is who I am. I want to share who I am. You know, they walk in as strangers, but I want them to leave as friends.
Right.
And actually, I just had this conversation last night with my boyfriend, David Minkin.
He lives in L.A., so
yeah.
Could that be in part why you wanted to go there?
Okay, it's a plus. It's a plus.
Okay, gotcha.
Is that I'm excited about this project.
Yeah.
This could be really, really cool.
Okay.
But
we'll cross our fingers.
He was talking about the Bob Fitch workshop that he had attended.
Great.
And how Bob said in the first 5 minutes, share something about yourself, because people are interested in who you are.
Okay.
Yeah, he said mention it right up front.
Yeah.
And then it's really important. I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what makes us people to them and not just performers.
So are you saying you put your gypsy thread up front as opposed to towards the end? I mean, I've got mine towards the end.
Mine's my finale right now, but I do share personal things with them the first 5 minutes.
You do? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I share with
That's
them how I got into magic. Mm-hmm. I share with them about my mom being a magician's assistant and growing up around it.
Right.
And I do the pom-poms in my show, and I do them differently than I think anyone has ever done them before.
Okay.
It's sort of a different take. Have you ever seen anybody do them like that? No.
Can you share that? Tell us. Or not.
I will let people see it. I might do it at IBM because I'll be honest, it's so good. I just hope people don't steal it because it's a new way
so good,
of doing it. You know,
I just saw Nick DeFont and he was performing at the Magi Fest.
And he's so good.
He's got a gag where he reaches behind an old man's ear, or no, like me, you know, just an older gentleman's ear, and pulls out like a hearing aid. You know, sort of a quarter. It's like, oh, you know, so they start talking to the hearing aid. But he said, you know, hey, everybody, because there are a bunch of magicians in the audience.
Uh-huh.
He said, this is mine. He said, if I see you guys do it, I'll come to your house with a bat. He said, this is not a lecture. I don't want you taking this, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
Sure. Yeah, because a lot of magicians are not thinking on their own. It's like, oh, that's a good idea. Of course, it's a good idea. You know, of course it works. They've already taken years to come up with this little idea, you know. And then you're stealing someone's babies, you know, basically, you know.
So you put your heart and your soul into,
sure,
you know.
Sure, as you've developed all that. Yeah, that's true. Well, do you really like working the ships more, or working on stage more, or what do you...
You know, I thought I had a clear vision of what I wanted, and I thought after being on a cruise ship, because I was on the cruise ship with Connie's show for a year. Mm-hmm. It was basically a year on one ship.
Was it back and forth on the different ships?
There was two contracts. I came home for about 2 weeks, but yeah. I was on the ship for a year straight.
Yeah, but my point is, was it to go around the world, or did it go to certain back and forth from like...
We were in the Med, and we also did the Canary Islands.
Okay.
That
was your
two
route.
Main travels, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. They picked me up once in Amsterdam. I joined them, and then we came down and did the Med, but mm-hmm. like the lower part of Europe, which was really cool. I enjoyed it because I got to explore Turkey, and like mm-hmm. You know, Izmir, Turkey was beautiful and awesome food. So it was a great travel experience.
Yeah,
I had a lot of fun. But I love the ships. I thought that I wouldn't be able to do the ships again because I was on that ship for so long.
You kind of got tired of it?
A year is a long time
on a ship.
You can
only eat that kind of food so much, I guess.
Yes, that's so true. And after doing the Zuiderdam with Holland America, I loved it. I love that I was on for 11 days. Yeah. I flew on the ship. I did my thing. I did a couple little extra shows because we had some orphans board mm-hmm. when we were in Aruba that spoke Dutch. And mm-hmm. I did magic because it was visual for them and did like a little Christmas surprise.
Oh, it's cool.
Yeah, it was really fun. So I got to do some great shows. It was fun. I got to explore. I made friends with passengers. I literally adopted some of the people that were there by themselves, and we formed a trivia team. We had a blast.
Yeah.
So but when I got the feedback from my agent on how Holland America went, and this just shows how important this is, they basically put you into a category of mm-hmm. whether you're red, yellow, or green.
Okay.
So it's red, you won't work. Yellow, you know, we need to work on some things, but we'll try you again soon. And green, you're good to be booked.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what my
That's
feedback
based on the comment
be.
Cards?
Yeah, based mm-hmm. on your comment cards. And the line was, Jessica Jane, very well received, great audience connection.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, that's exactly what I'm going for, and I'm so glad mm-hmm. it came across.
Right.
That's so important to me. So I do love the ships because I can do a show and I can connect with people afterward.
Right.
Like I do this whole tightrope thing about, you know, living your dreams, and it's cool to find out after the show as you're meeting people around the ship
mm-hmm.
what their dream is. What's the thing that they do in their life that makes them feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned on stage, and it makes for a really interesting conversation, and you make friends with these people on the ship.
That's the thing, that people will seek you out and they feel as if that they have a connection with you because there's something that they can relate to.
Yeah.
As opposed to, it's like, I don't know what to say to a magician. You know, whenever mm-hmm. that you meet somebody for the first time, you say you're a magician, they go, oh, you know, my kids like magic or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They don't really know what to say.
Or
they
a musician.
Know.
What do you play?
Well, yeah. And I always say, I play the cards. And they go, what? And and then we kind of have a different conversation. But, you know, that's true. The point is that they don't know how to speak to a magician or an mm-hmm. entertainer. I mean, if it's an entertainer, it's a singer. They say, oh, you know, what kind of songs you sing? Or have you ever known such and such or whatever? Or where do you play? And some place that I can see it. But you know, for the magicians, I mean, there's so few of us. I don't think people know how to react when they meet a real magician.
Yeah.
You know, do you find that on the ships as well?
You know, I...
Or in Pigeon Forge, even when after the shows people come up?
I don't usually have that, but I think it's because my thing is so much connection. Mm-hmm. I've watched that happen with people and magicians, but I'm so much about creating a connection before anything else. I've mm-hmm. really never had a hard time talking to people after the shows.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
even before the shows, because occasionally I'll do like the Carol Burnett style question and answers before the show
cool.
even starts,
uh-huh.
which is fun because you get to know people.
Exactly.
So,
that's,
especially
that's
if it's a
good
thin
idea.
Crowd,
yes.
if you're not over 100 people, mm-hmm. to walk out 5 minutes before it starts and see what questions they have for you. Like, I'm a magician. I know you might have some questions, so ask away. Yeah. I will answer anything. This
I love
is
that.
Like Carol Burnett,
that's
you know?
Yeah, of course. I love that. I had never seen anybody else do that. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's fun. And it it really does give you an opportunity to bond with them, and then they feel like they know you.
You know, and I worked at Magic Castle the last time, the most recent time. It wasn't hopefully my last time, but the most recent time that I was working in the close-up room, and I walked out front, the people who were in line, and I introduced myself, and I asked them what their names. I hope you'd enjoy the show and whatever. And so when they came in, they kind of already knew me.
Yeah.
You know, there are different philosophies of whether that you should be a mystery or not whenever they come in that they don't know anything about you, but I kind of feel like, well, if I know them and they know me, that I've already broken that friendly character. You know,
definitely.
They know I'm a regular guy, you know, kind of a thing.
No, I completely agree with that.
But what I was talking about is that, so specifically, if you are going to be in a restaurant or you're in a social situation completely unrelated to magic, and that you, I don't care, let's say you're in Chicago for whatever reason, and you're out to dinner and someone introduces you, and that one of the first questions people always will ask, what do you do? Because they want to have some commonality, of, you know, rather than just talking about sports or weather, so they can talk about, you know, whatever you're...
Yeah.
And so when you say you're a magician, again, like you say, the, you know, so musician, but if they do say magician, I just look at in their eyes, they kind of blink, and it's like, where do I go from here? They don't have a question to ask.
See, I think it's always sort of a follow-up thing is how I'll then get them comfortable with it, because they'll ask if I'm a magician. They'll say, how did you get into that? And when I say, I grew up in a magic family, my mom was a magician's assistant, they go, whoa, wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and did this, and I ran away and joined the circus when I was 16, and
blah, blah, blah,
that stuff. And then... And then they're interested, and it's they'll hit on points like, oh, I remember going to this when I was a kid, or I got the Marshall Brodin TV magic cards.
Sure.
Or they'll find something to relate to.
Within your story.
With most people, they have something of those categories that they'll latch on to and be able to share a story with. You know, because that's what I like is then getting them to share a personal story that we can then make a call back to later in a conversation, because I feel like that forms more of a bond.
Right.
And then the next time I see that person, if they told me a story about their dog Fido, I'm like, how's Fido doing?
Sure.
And they're like, she remembered.
Yeah, there's nothing like calling.
Oh, yeah.
That's
so strong. Yeah. So I'll actually use, you know, them saying, what do you do for a living? A magician, to then open a conversation that's going to form more of a connection between me and the people that I'm talking with so that it can be used later and we can establish a friendship versus just, you know, a quick casual back and forth.
I don't have really a great story on my background the way that you do as far as when people would ask. And so I created a story.
Oh, cool.
And you might like this. It's kind of interesting. Actually, I created this story when I was with Toastmasters, because I had taken a Toastmasters class in order to try to speak better on stage and try to get rid of my uhs and ahs and everything. I still do that, but not as bad as I used to. Anyhow, so the story I come up with was saying that, well, you know, I'm actually from kind of a showbiz family, that my mother and father actually met in Las Vegas at Circus Circus, that my dad was a dealer at the blackjack table, and then my mother was an aerialist in Circus Circus, and so, you know, he was looking up at her each night, and they kind of got to know each other and everything, and so that's kind of how that I got started, because my dad started showing me some card tricks and things, because he was a card dealer there at the blackjack table, and also that my mother had good stage presence and was able to talk to an audience, and I kind of got that, so through them, and they go, oh, yeah, and so people could kind of relate to that. And then I thought, man, I've created a lie. You know, it's kind of it's hard to lie and stick with something. You know, it's like, well, what was that like living in Vegas? Well, we moved when I was young, and we went on a cruise ship. What's that like? Well, okay, you can kind of get down the wrong road, you know, with trying to tell a lie. Remember what you had. Anyhow, I'm just saying, you got a very interesting story. So, and when you were with the circus, what did you do? Were you doing like an assistant with a magician in the sideshow or something? Or?
Basically, we were at the Meadowlands Fair. I was with Uncle Al, and we were doing the show. And I was thoroughly intrigued by the World of Wonders circus sideshow run by the time at Ward Hall and Chris Kreiss, king of the sideshow. And I went over to the tent one night, and I made friends with the cast, the very colorful cast of the show. They had some incredible people there. And I learned to eat fire that night.
Okay.
As you can imagine, Uncle Al was not thrilled.
Who taught you that?
The whole cast taught me that, but mainly Elton, who was the head of that show.
Yeah.
And I was baptized by fire, and they put fire on my tongue, and then they taught me how to put out a torch, and I learned the transfers, and every night I would go back and I'd learn more.
Right.
And by night three, I'm walking on broken glass, and by night four, I'm sitting in the electric chair and lighting you know, light bulbs. Madame Volterra.
Yeah, right.
And at the end of the run, Ward walked out. He goes, "Darling, I think that you're a diamond in the rough." He goes, "And I want to be the one to shine you up a bit. Come on the road with us." And I was like, "Well, really? You want me to go on the road with the circus sideshow?" And he goes, "I want to teach you how to talk the ballet stage." I'm like, "Well, what does that entail?" He goes, "It's very simple. Talk to people, not at them." And it was this whole lesson with Ward of learning to talk to people and not at them that changed me as a performer. Granted, I learned really cool things, and I did. I ate fire. I ate light bulbs. I walked on broken glass. I sat in an electric chair. I walked on a ladder of swords. I got in the blade box. I was two of the legs of the four-legged woman. That's true. I had my head chopped off, and then I sang a song sitting there, you know, with my head on the throne and stuff. It was interesting. But learning that ballet stage, standing out there with Ward and with the great Pooh Bah, who was the 26-inch tall fire eater. Gosh, he was like 85 years old, and his face looked like a callous because he'd had fire go over his head so many times.
Oh my goodness. Now, how old were you at the time then? 17?
16.
Yeah. Well, my son learned to eat fire from Brian Brushwood. He was working.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because he was an intern, his first intern, you know, with that several years ago.
Yeah.
Brian's like a son of mine also. We've been good friends since he was in high school. And so, anyhow, he was looking for an intern to travel with him for his school shows, and my son helped him and actually got school credit from Texas A&M.
So That's awesome.
Yeah, it was funny, you know, that I was actually paying Brian to employ my son in a way, you know, because I'm paying the school, you know, so he's getting credit for it. Anyhow, so he comes home and realized he'd learned how to eat fire. My other son, Sean, knew that he did this, but didn't want to tell my wife. My wife's a dental hygienist.
Oh!
And so she didn't want any fire, you know, near his teeth and the break and everything. And, you know, Brian said, "Don't tell your mom. I don't want Kathy to be mad at me either." You know, well, eventually she found out and she flipped. She freaked and, you know, she finally calmed down, accepted it. But, and what was funny further is that he was at a party and when he met his then now wife, so this lady had come over and started talking. It was kind of like a moth to a flame. It's like, that guy's cool.
Eating
fire, something different, you know, in this party at someone's house. And then they started talking, one thing led to another, and, you know, there you go. So I'm sure you've made a lot of friends
I've had some interesting fire eating stories.
Like,
and
what?
One actually just came up when I was home. I don't think Tom even knows this. Oh, God. So I was 17 and I was having a weird heart thingy for a little bit. And I went to a cardiologist. His name is Dr. Krasner. And he kind of looks like Ross from Friends.
Yeah.
So he's my heart doctor. And they put me on a Holter monitor for a week just to, like, record things and keep up with it.
Yep.
And I went to a friend's party. It was a bonfire party.
Okay.
And they had found out that I was, you know,
fire eater,
going out with the circus and stuff and doing things. And I was about to go on another year with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me if I could eat fire. I was like, "Well, yeah, sure." Not thinking about the halter monitor at all.
Oh, man. Okay.
And it's kind of nerve-wracking because,
you
know, there's all these people. It's like 100 people I went to high school with, and I was not popular. I got picked on. I never got asked to prom.
Really?
I was, like, bottom of the barrel high school. Like, I was not cool.
Were you, like, a gothic girl or overweight?
No.
Or you just were a nerd?
I was just a nerd.
Okay.
Like, I still am a nerd, but now it's cool, so it's passable. So, like, now it's okay.
Yeah.
But I went and I got my torches out of the car. I'm like, "Oh, this is going to be great. Got the kerosene. I'm eating fire." It's about 2:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
And I do my fire eating act. I was really nervous because...
Yeah.
You know, these are all my friends, and this is the
first
time. So
obviously your heart is palpitating.
Oh,
racing like a rabbit.
So about 4 days later, I'm back in the cardiologist's office.
Yep.
This is the most awkward conversation of my life with my mother. So my mom's sitting there, I'm sitting there, Dr. Krasner walks in. And he's like, "Well," he goes, "we picked up a little something." He goes, I need to ask you an honest question, Jessica." I'm like, "Yeah?" And my mom doesn't know I eat fire at this point.
Okay.
My mom has no idea what I'm doing. She thinks, I think she might have, I forget, she may have even thought, like, "Oh, she's just out there being the assistant in the play box."
That's right. Nothing
no idea
dangerous.
I'm, like, eating light bulbs and stuff
like that. Right.
So he shows it, and he's like, "This came up at, like, you know, 2:31 a.m. on this date." And my mother looks at me, and I'm not saying anything.
And she I know goes, nothing.
Oh, she's like, Jessica, we need to have a talk. She mm-hmm. goes, was this something with a boy? I went, what? What in the world are you talking about? She's like, you know, your heart rate increases or something. Right. You tell me. I'm like, no, Mom, I ate fire, okay? Yeah. I ate fire. My mom's eyes got as white as silver dollars. It was awful. She's like, I would have rather heard that you did something else. Jessica, that's not safe. And then started the family conversation of fire eating. Yeah, so that's how my mom found out I started eating fire.
That kind of reminds me of a story that Don Weiberg had told me once about when he was going in to the doctor and they were going to have to install a catheter. And that is quite an uncomfortable position where that goes. And he was trying to explain to the doctor, was trying to explain to Don, you know, what this is going to be and the pain and what it might entail. And he pulled up his phone. Well, we had been at an IBM convention. I think it was in Phoenix, and Todd Robbins was there, and he taught us how to walk on glass and also cool. how to put nails up your nose.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Okay. And so I had taken a picture of him, and he had one of me where he had a nose, and this nail up his nose. And he said, Doc, if I can do that, you know, put that there, I can put that there, you know. The guy said, and the doctor said, why on earth would you do that? You know?
Dude, they get freaked out by that stuff.
Oh, sure, sure.
I went to my ear, nose, and throat doctor. It was back in September because I had actually aspirated a little bit of fuel.
Yep, yep.
And I went to the ear, nose, and throat doctor, yeah. and they had to do the camera down my throat through my nose.
All right.
And he's like, this is really uncomfortable. Do you want me to numb it? And I'm like, listen, I've had a nail, a drill. Like, it's going to be fine.
And they're going, whoa, what?
When you had a drill in your face, trust me, the little camera on a wire is not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, right. We'll see. So he didn't numb it. He didn't do anything. He just starts feeding it back. And he's going all the way down. I'm still holding a full conversation with him as he's going. And this guy is laughing his behind off that I'm talking to him as the camera's going through my nose down my throat, just like nothing's wrong.
And he's saying, I've never seen anybody react this way. Yeah.
Well, the receptionist actually came in the room and she's like, I've never heard him laugh this hard
really?
In the 25 years that I have worked for him. What is going on? And she's like, you have to, oh, okay.
she got it.
Yeah, she got it.
Wow. That is funny.
True story.
Wow.
Dr. Bromberg.
So I asked about close-up, and also, do you do a few cards and coins and things
yes,
as well?
Yes, I do. I do some cards and coins in the show. I have close-up segments I do mm-hmm. in my show on the ship, as well as the Gatlinburg show. Mm-hmm. So I have gotten into the fun world of, you know, cameras. Yay!
Yes, exactly.
And the streaming the cameras and the projection and all the different options. And I remember it was terrifying before I went on the ship.
Why is that?
Because I realized as we were doing the tech that depending on what camera you have, mm-hmm. if you're disembarking or you know, if the ship's leaving the port, the ship vibrates.
Yes, right.
And so your camera's going to vibrate.
I hadn't thought about it. It's not on a gimbal, I guess, or something to throw it.
It wasn't. See, I had it stationary.
Yeah, okay.
And so I learned a really big lesson from that. Granted, it was fine, but it wasn't up to what I want it to be.
Sure.
So the gimbal's exactly what I'm thinking. I've got some thoughts on it, and I want to do some more research and talk to more people that are doing it because it is a new realm for me.
Right, but it adds a different dimension also to your
stage. It does.
I just saw Rick Wilcox's fantastic show.
He's amazing.
Up in the Wisconsin Dells, and he does a close up on stage and does a coin routine that's fantastic. You know, on the overhead camera that he has for the rest of the show and everything then too. So he does a lot of stage illusions and complements that with a close-up. So I think by adding that it does show also what we were talking at the beginning of this, kind of coming full circle, about how that when people see you in a particular venue, it's like, oh, you know, I can book her. But they see you in that particular thing. But if you are multifaceted, they're saying, oh, she also does this or he does that or whatever. And so then you start thinking about that. Because a lot of times when we get booked, it's because we've been in a strolling environment, like when I'm working at a cocktail party, that another company will hire me. Likewise, if I'm going to be an after-dinner performer, that's all they see me doing. So that's why I like to say, well, let me do both. So that way people kind of get to see different opportunities, you know. And, of course, you can always drop hints during your show, you know, or of saying, well, whenever I'm, you know, working a trade show for this company or recently I was doing some strolling or whatever. By doing that, then at least even if they don't see it, at least they kind of get to hear that you are multifaceted and you have these other skills that could entertain.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And being able to work in any venue. Like this year has been... Granted, I've been around magic my whole life, and I've been in shows where I've had to work in very difficult situations. Sure. But doing my own show out of the 50-pound bag over the last year, I mean, we've gone from being on beautiful stages to, you know, with the USO shows, to we were in a room with fluorescent lights, and the microphone they handed us was a singing machine microphone to plug into a karaoke machine.
Perfect.
And we all just kind of looked at each other like, we're going to make it work, because that's what we do, and that's what we're here to do, a show.
Exactly right.
But, you know, I was blessed in Gatlinburg to have a theater that I was in, you know, every week, you know, multiple times a week, but then we're on the road.
And with a professional
there.
Stage crew and, you know, light and sound people know how to do that, too.
Well, with Sweet Fanny Adams, it was me and Chris. So we ran the show off of Media Star, ran it with the remote. And it looked like a production
the big
show,
professional
you know?
Show, yeah.
And the same on the cruise ships. Like, it's just me and the remote. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I go in and I do really specific lighting on my show to make it look like a big production show.
Do you really?
Yeah. I think it took me an hour and a half to light the show on
intelligent
the ship.
Lights, or do you have...
intelligent lights, okay. too. I have an idea of what I want, and I can see it, and I can now bring a video, since we have it on video.
That's
from
a good
the ship,
idea.
To show the lighting
to say
tech
the
and say, this is what I need. I need these four moving lights to go here, and, you know, I need to make sure that I have UVs or Congos for the gypsy thread, because I need it to pop. Mm-hmm. For the straitjacket, I want these intelligent lights pumping, and I want to do this. And it looks like a bigger show,
of
but
course.
It came out of a 50-pound bag! I love
you're
it!
Thinking, this is great,
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And then with the close-up segment, you know, the 10-minute close-up segment, which, you know, I'm using people from the audience on stage, too. So you're getting the magic on the camera, but also the reactions of two people sitting right there watching it. And that's such a great thing to watch. You get a little bit of everything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, and my question on that would be, how did you start to learn about lighting? Was that when you were younger, or by trial and error, or through experience? And maybe you had another lighting guy, and then you thought, oh, that worked pretty well. Let's add this, and then a little bit at a time, or did it just kind of come to you?
Well, we got to do a little bit of lighting with my Uncle Al's show, and I watched him do some stuff. But then when I went to Terry Evanswood's show, and I watched
whole different
him
level.
Light something, wow. I want to say there were 234 cues, lighting cues in Terry's show. Maybe something like that.
In a 90-minute show.
He'll have to let me if it's... No, that's right. Okay. I think it was like over 200, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he's hitting the button, and there's that many cues, and there's the moving lights here, and it changes to this, and it fades to this, and lights up on this, and, you know, how to light black art, how to light this, how to light that. Mm-hmm. And it was a really, really big lesson. And then I went on the cruise ship with Connie's show, and I saw the lights that they had in place, and I learned a lot about that, that for floating ball, we're doing these four moving lights, and they're directed here.
Right.
I'm like, hey, this is a really great lesson. Then went back to Terry's show, because one of his assistants got pregnant, and he needed a girl to jump back in. He couldn't put the tubes in the tube illusion anymore.
So wouldn't fit.
I got back the day I got back from the ship. He's like, I need a girl now. Like, okay. But then we changed the show, and we got to start from scratch, and I got to watch him relight the show, having learned everything that I, you know, had learned through experience. And so then I got to go to Sweet Fanny Adams and start lighting that. And then on the cruise ship, you have so many options.
Oh, sure.
So that's been wonderful.
One of the nice things now that you can do, and help me, I can't think, Jessica, what the name of this is called, but where you can project something in the background. You don't need to have all of the props or the painted scenery, because they can project this digitally on there. I mean, I saw a David Da Vinci show in Vegas this last year, and it looked like a huge show, but he didn't, when you stop and think about it, he didn't have a lot of painted backdrops. They were all projected images. I don't know what you call that, but it's, anyhow.
I'm not sure. Like, I know I even project my logo before my show on the big screen.
Well, yeah,
so
that's
like
gobo,
a
gobo thing. Yeah, and Rick does that also with the doves and whatnot on the stage curtain. But I'm saying there's something that can be checked, it's like backlit or something, I think, and so it looks like that things can be moving, or it can be a static image, probably a lot like when you did Penn and Teller Fool Us. I suspect that background, you know, it was just a projected image, because you could see that. I mean, that was not something that they had overlaid for
popped.
TV. That was
and
everyone they do, every person has a different kind of a background, and they can change that fairly easily, and it's cheaper than having to paint the whole background.
I really liked that.
I forgot what that's called.
They hit the nail on the head with those backgrounds. They were nice.
Yeah. Now, were you also, just kind of to quickly wrap up over here, when you went on Penn and Teller Fool Us, did they contact you? Did you contact them? Or how'd that, because people are often asking me, so, you know, I'd like to go and try and show them something. And so
I sent them a video. It was after the Gatlinburg fire, which was, of course, a weird thing. I had planned on submitting something to them, but what I was going to submit was on the coffee table at Chris's house.
Okay.
So I was dead set against it, but then decided, you know, if I'm actually going to eat fire again, start conquering my fear of fire, might as well do it in a video to send Penn and Teller fool us.
Yeah.
And I sent the video, honestly not expecting to hear anything, and then got a message from them about 2 weeks later. I was with my friend Carol Hendricks and a Jewel Osco, and I thought I was going to be sick because I was like, oh gosh. They want me to actually do it. What do I do now?
Yeah. They bought it.
I was like, I didn't actually expect to get on the show. But yeah, I just sent in a video and they contacted me and the rest took off from there.
Yeah. Well, that's cool because, of course, Penn does fire.
Yeah,
fire and all that,
yeah.
So that was cool. Well, to wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. You listen, you know what I'm talking
about.
So what is your philosophy of life? What do you live by? What's your magic word?
Being on the tightrope is living. Everything else is just waiting.
I knew it. I was waiting for that. That kind of comes full circle. Just JJ, thank you very much. It's been
thank
fantastic.
You, man.
I love
fun.
You. I really enjoyed this. So with The Magic Word podcast. That was Jessica Jane, JJ, Scotty out.
Well, how about that, folks? Another full and exciting and fulfilling episode. A great podcast. I hope, at least I enjoyed. I hope that you did as well. And if you did, why don't you just leave a comment? In fact, you could really help us out a lot if you happen to use iTunes or if you use a Google Play Store, however that you would download your podcasts or wherever that you go, if you could leave a positive comment, if you go to the iTunes Store and give us 5 stars, that'd be great, along with some sort of a positive comment about what it is you like about this podcast. That really helps us a lot with our ratings within the iTunes Store, as well as any place else that you can go and share this on your social media, not just by liking us on and following us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, which I encourage you to do as well, but also then to share these things on your own platform, on your own social media, on your Facebook page and elsewhere. Let other people know about this then as well. And one way, of course, of keeping up to date is by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, which we tell you again about what's happening each week and what's going to be coming up then the following week, as long as I know it, unless there happens to be something surprising that comes up like we just had this last week again with the convention that we had there, that's Penguin Max. Well, anyhow, this has been just great, and I want to again thank JJ very much for being my guest and for Tom Vorjahan for helping to set this up then certainly as well, and I look forward to seeing JJ and many of you hopefully at the IBM convention in Scottsdale later this year. And so, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that being on the tightrope is living. Everything else is just waiting. This is Scotty out.